All right. Admin, real quick. Zoe, can I get you to punch buttons for me? Okay. If anybody knows where the clicker is, please let me know. I had it during Sunday school, but for the life of me, I have no clue where it's at. Isn't this awful? I mean, the whole Bible reading, you know, so you can imagine what I'm feeling like right now, okay? I'm going through my pockets, I'm looking through everything, like, what did I do with this clicker? So it's here someplace. If you want, everybody can look under your seats. If you see it, let me know where it's at, because I haven't got a clue where it's at. So, if you, this is wild. It is right here. Did you see it while you were reading? No, I mean, I know, and I was right here. Did you see me walk up and peek? I was like, I didn't make fun of my dad's age. That was God's reading. God said something about 80 years old. And I was going to say, Dad, you've been lying to me. You're not really 80, because I know you can taste, and I know you can hear. You can hear from the other room. You're over 80. Oh, we need to... We need to come all the way down. Sorry. More admin. This is actually stuck in the beginning, so you know what happens behind the scenes. This is actually in my message. And so we just do that in the beginning, but we put something in between. So now you know what it looks like behind the scenes. There we go. Okay. I think we're here. So we have been talking about... through the entire Bible, but we've made ourselves all the way up into here in 2 Samuel talking about the kings, okay, of Israel is really where we're in the whole process of, but right now we're in the kingdom of David, okay? And so we have looked at David having been chosen by God. There was the covenant that God made with David, but that David soon afterwards, whether he became distracted, full of himself, whatever, pride, okay, it happens, there's no temptations overtaking you, but such is common to man, okay, and David is no different, and so he decides to stay back from battle, he chooses to go for Bathsheba, he chooses, to, instead of confessing when Bathsheba's pregnant, to kill her husband instead, Uriah, and so sin spirals, it has the ripple effects. We see it then starting to come out in Joab's disrespect for him, and then we saw it come out in the lack of self-control of his sons. Amnon decides that he desires Absalom's sister Tamar, doesn't go to his father to ask permission or whatever. He just forces himself upon her. Absalom is irate, especially because his father then does nothing about it. And again, we saw last week that David was the seed of justice. Okay, as the king. That's where it should have gone. And so Absalom's irate. He waits 2 years. David doesn't do anything, so Absalom takes it all into justice into his own hands. He does what he believes is right to do. And so he plots the murder of Amnon. Okay, Amnon did deserve to die, but it didn't happen the way it was, so he takes justice in his own hand. So Absalom has Amnon killed, but then Absalom flees into self-exile. Okay, so he's in self-exile, but Joab sees his father David, right? Absalom's father, David, and he sees that David is just distraught because of the separation, and so he feigns the plan to bring in the woman from Tekoa, remember? And she speaks the plan, the plot, to bring Absalom back. And so David allows Absalom to come back, but there was two conditions. Does anybody remember the two conditions that when he came back? He couldn't see his face. House arrest, okay? So he had to stay in Jerusalem, and he couldn't see David's face. So he comes back, but then we begin to see that, Absalom says to Joab, he says, look, it had been better for me just to stay where I was. I had freedom there. But here I come back, and I'm not even allowed to see the king's face. This is ridiculous. And so he winds up burning Joab's field in order for Joab to come see him, right? Kind of shows a little bit of the character of Absalom there. And so Joab goes to see the king. The king says, yes, you can bring him to me. And so king kisses Absalom. And from all intents and purposes, from all appearances, it looks like what? Looks like reconciliation, okay? But all along, Absalom was plotting again. Okay? And so that gave him the freedom throughout Jerusalem to do what he wanted to do. And so the next he begins to do is he begins to plot the overthrow of David's reign, okay, to usurp his kingdom. And so we saw last week, actually 2 weeks ago, this plot where Absalom then comes and he begins to woo the people to his side, and then he plots the overthrow by having everybody come to Hebron, including one special character, and that character is Ahithophel, remember? And so last week we talked about who Ahithophel really is. He is Bathsheba's grandfather, okay? And so this whole intertwining, and we see that Ahithophel probably, based upon some of the counsel that is there and his hatred for David, okay, because it all comes out as Absalom's counselor, that probably Ahithophel hasn't liked David for a long time, okay? Probably hasn't been giving him wise counsel to begin with. And so Ahithophel wants to kill David himself, but David had sent back, I hate when my brain walks away, the Hushite. No, not a, who? No, Ittite's a Gittite. He's over the. It is Hushai. No, he's. Yeah, but Hushai the Archite. Archite. Sorry, thank you. Hushai the Archite. So no, that's all good. So it was Hushai. Hushai the Archite. So he sends him back. Hushai is faithful to David, so he disrupts the. That's the whole plan, is to send him back so he can disrupt the good counsel of Ahithophel, and he does. And so Ahithophel goes out and he kills himself because of it. He realizes that God is undermining everything to bring David back, okay? And so he kills himself. And so the war is protracted. Absalom goes out into the war like Hushai tells him to do, and Joab winds up killing him, okay? And so what we saw at the end of last week then is that David does what? When Absalom is killed and his army is victorious, how does David respond? He weeps and moans, okay? And his army has to steal back into the city. And Joab says, now I know that you would have rather have all of us die and Absalom survive. How dumb is that? You know, because Absalom was who? The usurper. Joab knew that that Absalom had to die. If Absalom didn't die, what would he do? He would try again. He would continue to seek to usurp. And there would be a division in the land. And that's where we pick it up today. Because what we see today is the first thing we read that Brian read just a little bit ago is that now all of a sudden with Absalom gone, there is a void in the kingdom. And so we see in verse 9, it says, now all the people were in dispute throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us. In other words, what are we going to do? Because we have no king. And so the first thing we see in this, the return of David to Jerusalem is this impetus for the king's return, in that the impetus begins with the movement of the people. What's really interesting is what's going on then is a lot what's going on almost now, okay? And there is this disputing among the people of what they should do. Should they bring the king back or not? And the word there to dispute is really the word nadan, okay, which is from the word Dan. So like if your name is Daniel, it's Dan is the word, okay? And it means to judge. And so the idea there is legalism, the law, okay? Not legalism like we talk about legal, oh, you're being legalistic, but in the legal realm, okay? And so they were actually having disputes. They were having discords. They were having legal disputes probably over the validity of David still being the king. Shouldn't he come back? Well, he should come back. I mean, the usurper's gone, and so he's rightfully the king. And others are saying, well, no, he left Jerusalem. He abdicated his throne. You know, he left before Absalom came back. Now, I'm reading between the lines, but you can kind of see how all this kind of goes on. Bring it into our day-to-day, you know, and all this debate about who should be the president and all this kind of stuff and da-da-da-da. And so there's all these legal wranglings about how things go on. And so you could see it even more when it comes to a monarchy, because there was a proper lineage that was going on and how this would happen, okay? And so, where is Israel in the process of a monarchy. Think about this. Where is Israel in the process of a monarchy? So we think England, okay? And so as we think England, who is the reigning ruler other than Parliament? But symbolically, anyway, who is the reigning ruler of England right now? The Queen of England, okay. Who? Queen Elizabeth, okay. Queen Elizabeth, I don't know if you knew this, died about 5 minutes ago. Oh, it's all, Mom. Did you know they took gullible out of the dictionary? Anyways, you thought so too. Yes, that's why I couldn't find the remote because I was really on my phone. I was looking at the local the latest news. No, so this is all pretend. The Queen really didn't die. Okay, now aren't you all going to be funny? That's not going to be funny. Anyways, you're going to go home and find out that at this moment, at 11:30 on Sunday, Queen Elizabeth died. And you say, "Ooh, Pastor Bob is really a prophet." Anyways, okay, so let's assume that Queen Elizabeth died 5 minutes ago. Okay, what's going to happen in England? Ah, wait, her son. How do you know? Her son, her grandson, you think so? Ah, see, now we're Americans and we're trying to dispute this thing. But get it, even as Americans, we know what? There is a progression to the throne. Make sense? Now, if you're in England, there's no doubt. They have been disputing this thing for years now, you know, with Andrew and Di and all this, you know, now Charles and all these other princes and all this kind of stuff, okay? They know, based upon lineage and progression, who is going to take the throne after Elizabeth. Make sense? Where is Israel in this process? They don't. They're just starting it. Does it make sense? Okay? I mean, David is the king, but he became king how? When Saul died. And so that's what we talked about when, remember with Mephibosheth, who's going to come back. Really, Mephibosheth is the what? Rightful heir to the throne if you were doing it by that progression. But God determined that he was going to take the kingdom out of the hands of out of Saul and place it into David. And then God made the decision to make a covenant with David and say to David, you shall not fail to have one of your seed sitting upon the throne. Does it make sense? So who made the decision of what the progression of the kingship in Israel should be? God. Do you get it? And so you could see these debates going on. Okay? We don't read about them, but that's what this word means. There was this great dispute going on among the people. So this was a grassroots effort. Make sense? The people understood it. They got it. They understood. Shouldn't David be the king? I mean, so this kind of underswell, if you were, that's going on, okay? Well, then you have the maneuver, and I use that word intentionally, the maneuver of the king. Because look what the king does. This is kind of interesting because remember when he was on the lam, when he was fleeing from Absalom in Zadok, and brought the ark to him, and he said, no, take the ark back. What did he say? If what? If God wills, I'll return. If God wants me still to be the king, if he wants me to be king again, then I'll come back. But what does David do here? So, verse 11, King David sends to Zadok and Abiathar, the priest, and says, speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the words of all of Israel have come to the king to this very house? You are my brethren, and you are my bone and my flesh. Why then are you the last to bring back the king? Okay? So what does he begin to do? He begins to work it out himself, doesn't he? Instead of waiting for God to do it, is God working? He is working. Make sense? Where is the underswell coming from? From the people. Make sense? But what does David begin to do now? He begins to manipulate. He begins to his maneuvers, okay, in order to try to get the elders to bring him back. Now, so his first of all is his comment to the elders of Judah. Hey, listen, what are you guys doing? D- Don't you hear what's going on? The people are crying for me to come back. Why are you not bringing me back? You guys need to bring me back. Who do you guys are? You're my own bone and my own flesh. If anybody should want to bring me back, you should want to bring me back. Right? He lays the what? Guilt trip on them. Right? But it doesn't end there. This one is really amazing to me. His comment to Amasa, verse 13. And say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? He was. He was a cousin of Joab and Abishai. Okay? So he's another one of David's relatives here. Okay? One of his nephews. Okay? Are you not my bone and my flesh? God do so to me and more also if you are not commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. What has Joab ever done for David anyway? Have you thought about that? I mean, again, we have a negative picture of Joab, okay? But way back when David was on the lam, not from Absalom, but when he was on the lam from Saul, and he was hiding in the caves, who was right there beside him? Joab and Abishai. In fact, when David says, can I have somebody go with me into the camp of Saul? Abishai was the guy who said, I'll go with you. And then he snuck into the camp, and Abishai is the guy who said, let me just pin him once. Let me just once. He won't make a noise. He won't make a sound. It'll only take once. We'll be out of here. David says, what? No, don't do it. Joab and Abishai have been David's constant, loyal companions, if you would. And yet there's this disdain that David has for Joab because Joab's a man of blood. And yet, who was it that David turned to when he had committed adultery with Bathsheba and he was trying to cover it up? Joab. And you wonder why Joab has an issue with David. I mean, what is David doing at this very moment? Who is Amasa? Who is Amasa? He was a cousin, right. He was a nephew of David, a cousin of Joab and Abishai. But specifically, in this very moment, why is he even talking to Amasa? Who was Amasa? He was the commander of the army of Absalom. He was the commander of the army of the usurping forces. He was a commander of the rebellious army. Who was the rightful king? David. Whose side was Amasa on? The wrong side. What is Amasa deserving of? Off with his head. But what does David do? He gives a political favor. If you're Joab right now, what are you thinking? I just risked my life for you. And you are stabbing me in the back. God, do so more to me if you do not become the commander of the army in place of Joab. The guy who wanted to kill you. You're going to make the commander of the army in the place of the guy who's been defending you for 30 years. Remember that when we come again to Adonijah seeking to usurp David. And you're going to find that the commander of Adonijah's army is Joab. Because Joab's finally going to say, I've had enough of it. So his comment to Amasa, again, there's no temptations overtaking you, but such as come to man. But God has used this for me, and I've talked to some of you, and I'm going to continue to talk to some of you too. But some of you, and this sounds prideful, and I don't mean it as prideful, so take this for what it's worth. Some of you, I really am humbled by the fact, and I'll pick on you, Rodney, okay? I know that you really secretly love 45 to hour and a half messages. That's something you've wanted all these years, and you keep praying, Lord, let him preach longer. But they and the Moffats, they have known us before we got saved. And they're still here. And so that's amazing to me. Anyways, and so that's faithful. And I ask myself, and I've been asking myself, come through, and there's numerous others of you, okay, that been for years alongside of us. You've been ministering to us. You've been encouraging us. And I think, what have I done? How have I encouraged you? Have I taken you for granted? And I know I have. And God forgive me for that. We tend to what? Take the ones who have been faithful to us and loyal to us for granted. Is the most faithful person to me? Yes? And how often? I pointed at you. You knew that though, huh? And do I take her for granted? How often do you take your spouse for granted? How often do we badmouth our spouse like David badmouthing Joab? And we act like, boy, I'd trade him in a heartbeat. As long as I get two for you, huh? It would take two to replace you. Anyways, I joke. But that's not, apart from Jesus Christ, she is the second best thing that's ever happened to me. And yet I take Marcia for granted. And there are times that I can verbally treat her wrongfully. Does that make sense? And so I just, you know, sometimes it's easy to blow through some of this stuff. But we need to learn the lesson. God's put them there for a reason. Okay? And David, in all this, he's missing it. He's turning away from the guys who have been behind him all the time, who've been faithful. So we go on now to the response to the king's return. And the first thing we see, God has got a sense of humor, man. I mean, he doesn't have to put certain things in the Bible. Why does he put certain things in the Bible? Isn't there some things that he didn't put in that you really want to know? And why? And then there's other things you think, why did he put this in? You know, but there's a reason. I mean, isn't this awesome? The first one that we read about to come back to welcome David back into Jerusalem is Shimei. Who is Shimei? He's the guy that was what? Cursing him. It serves you right. You know, this is your bloodthirsty guy. You know, da 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 da. You know, calling on curses upon the king. And when they went out, do you remember? It was his loyal companions who wanted to wipe Shimei out then. Remember? And David said what? No, let him go. Because God's speaking through him. God in his sovereignty is allowing Shimei to call down his curses to humble me. So now they're coming back in, and Shimei comes back, you know, with his tail tucked between his legs. Like what? Oops. I am in a world of hurt now. What would you expect him to do? He has one of two options. He either comes back and pleads what? For mercy. Or he does what? Hide. Okay, that's probably true. The third option. Flee. I'm taking the hide, but I'm taking the hide like, whew, I'm out of here, hide, you know? Because I am public enemy number one here, okay? I have made myself an accursed and affront to the king who now is coming back. And so he comes back and he's, you know, all this, his confession, you know, oh, I was wrong, I know I was wrong. You know what? Aren't you glad that God is a God of grace and a God of mercy? But there's also something about God that's different, that makes him different than us. God knows the truth, the heart, the truth. That's exactly right. He knows the heart. He knows the truth. What don't I know? I don't know the heart. I can seek to discern things based upon the tone of voice or the actions to which something is being stated. Does that make sense? We all tend to do that, don't we? But inwardly, I mean, when it all boils down to it, I don't know what? Someone's heart. And so Peter came to Jesus and said, how many times should I what? Forgive somebody? Seven times? And Jesus said what? No, 70 times seven times. And that was supposed to be how, in what period of time? No, but in what period of time? A day. Right, but more than you can keep track of, yes. But the point is, when have you ever had somebody come to you 490 times in a day? Okay? I mean, that's really, I mean, someone really has to be doing something really bad to come back 400, almost 500 times in one day to ask for forgiveness. But Jesus said, basically then, as many times as they come back to ask forgiveness, what should you do? Forgive them. David models this for us. Shimei comes back, and he asks for forgiveness. David gives him his pardon. Abishai wants to destroy him. That's where David, again, slaps Joab and Abishai, because he doesn't just say, Abishai. He says, what do I have to do with you, sons of Zeruiah? Okay? Remember, Abishai and Joab are both the sons of Zeruiah. And so he's just, whack! I mean, instead of, Proverbs says, a what? Turns away wrath. A soft answer. How could he have responded to Abishai? Abishai, I appreciate your loyalty to me. And you're right. Shimei deserves to die. But we have got to be greater than they who seek evil. I have the kingdom. It's in my power. At any moment, I can execute judgment upon him. Let's give Shimei the chance to prove that he is being honest here. And then he could have done what he asked Solomon to do later on, because Solomon's going to be the one who tells Shimei that he has to move to Jerusalem, and the day that he leaves Jerusalem will be the day that he orders his own death sentence. Okay, Shimei is going to wind up dying. He's going to wind up being executed, okay, because he leaves Jerusalem. That's later on. When we get to Solomon, we'll get to that. David has never forgotten the bitterness to Shimei. So though he gives him a pardon here, he doesn't really forgive him. Do you get it? This is a big deal, okay? So David's still struggling, but David is doing what God has done for us. How many of you deserve death? Every single one of you. It's exactly right. But God has given us his pardon. And aren't you thankful that it is a true pardon? That God has not held bitterness toward us? That he's just waiting for us to slip up one more time so that he can do what he didn't do to begin with? Mephibosheth is the next guy that comes. Find this very interesting. Again, you got to remember, Mephibosheth is what? He's the lame man. He's the cripple. And he comes, and we're told his appearance right off the bat that he has not cut his nails. He has not clipped his mustache. He has allowed himself to go in disarray. This is a picture for a Jew of someone who has been mourning, okay? That if you are in mourning, that you don't take care of yourself, your appearance. That's why Jesus said that when you fast, then make sure you take care of, do your fasting in secret, okay? Take care of yourself. Don't do it for others to see, okay? And so this is the same idea. Mephibosheth has been probably fasting as well. He's been praying and he's been fasting. He's not been taking care of it. He's been mourning for David while he's gone. Why didn't Mephibosheth go with David? Say again? He's lame. Well, he brings the accusation because David says to him, why didn't you come when I left? What does he tell him? The accusation. I wanted to. But Ziba wouldn't bring me along. Remember, Ziba's the guy who came and said to David, David says, well, where's your master at? He's, oh, he said, ah, oh, now they'll figure out that Saul was the rightful king and they'll make me king. That wasn't true, was it? But David didn't look for discernment at that time, and he told Ziba what? You can have all of your master's acreage. You can have all of his lands and everything else. Well, now all of a sudden David comes back, and here's Mephibosheth to meet him, and David finds out what? I was lied to by Ziba. Okay. Jury, what should happen as a response to this? I'm not even going to give you a name. What should happen? You'd find this information out, okay? What's your judgment? Say again? Who? Mephibosheth? Ah, Ziba. Ah, Ziba's what? Guilty. He's a liar and he's a thief. That's exactly right. He's a liar and he's a thief. He has proven himself to be unfaithful, untrue, okay? So, minimum, he should be what? Removed from the estate. And somebody else should be given the privilege of being the steward of the house of Mephibosheth. which Mephibosheth, you remember, he was granted all of Saul's lands. What does David do? He splits it between Mephibosheth and Ziba. I heard somebody go, huh? Yeah, huh? Huh? What? What kind of justice is this? I understand it's a day for celebration, but it's not a day for injustice. God is not a what? Discerner. He is not a discerner. Was Ziba guilty? He was. At the very minimum, even if it's a day of celebration and you're not going to kill Ziba, take away what he gave to Ziba wrongfully, give it back to Mephibosheth, and tell Ziba what? In my grace, by my grace, you have your life. Go live someplace. Go find a well, but sir, your honor, I have no place. Go figure it out, Ziba. Go figure it out. You could have. Done properly, I'm sure Mephibosheth would have what? Granted him some of this land. Does it make sense? Look at Mephibosheth's desire at this point. Just let him have it. The fact that you are back is all I really want. How gracious is that? Mephibosheth could have said what? I want it all. And I want him to serve justice. Mephibosheth, even back then, when he came to David, when David offered him chesed, remember that? Who am I that I should receive? I'm a dead dog. He says the same thing. Who am I? I deserve to be dead. I am of the household of Saul. I'm not one that you should be blessing. I'm rather one that should be gone. Again, Mephibosheth has the greater heart at this moment. The next we have Barzillai, or his acceptance. So his acceptance of David's thing. Barzillai. Barzillai comes. Now Barzillai, if you remember, he's the older man who came to David when they crossed the river, crossed the creek, the brook in Kidron, and who came with all the food, okay, to feed David's men. How many were following David? Give me just round ballparks. Thousands. Thousands. You have multiple different, you're thinking Ittai, the Gittite, who was over 300. But that was just the 300 who were from Gath. Then you have the ones that Abishai and Joab are over as well. So you have at least 1,000 that are in the army, not to mention all their families, okay, and everybody else who's following the king out of Jerusalem. So you got thousands of people, and Barzillai comes, and he feeds all of them, not just for a day, but he gives enough stuff that they can have a whole month of rations. That's a lot of produce. That's a lot of donations. They didn't have the tax there where he could probably write it off. No 501c3 happening here. You know, can I, David, have the receipt at the end? And he's just coming. And so now he comes and he's just excited that David is coming back. He's not coming for the reward, but David wants to reward him for his faithfulness. That's exciting. It's very, very exciting. But I'm thinking again to myself of Joab and Abishai. I mean, Barzillai did a lot. But Joab and Abishai have what? Been here for years. Put their life on the line. This guy came one time and gave you a massive financial gift, added to the campaign, which is very important. I'm not downplaying Barzillai's thing. But again, if I'm these guys on the side and I'm looking at how David is treating Shimei, how David is treating Ziba and Mephibosheth, now how he's treating Barzillai, I'm starting to think what? Why do I keep getting the backhand? And so he says to Barzillai, you come with me. I mean, you won't need anything. Doesn't seem to appear that Barzillai what? Needs anything anyway. Okay? And so you won't need anything. And so Barzillai says, I'm 80 years old. Look, I can't hear. It's hard for me to see. I can't taste my food. All I really want to do, if you want to do something for me, let me just go back so I can die where my family is buried. I just want to go back and I want to enjoy life where I grew up. I recognize that you're what? You're the king. And if you tell me, no, I want you to come eat at my table and live with me, then I'm going to what? I'm going to come eat with you and I'm going to live at your table. Okay? I'm going to eat at your table and I'm going to live with you. But here's my request. Barzillai's request. Let Chimham come and live with you instead. Here's your servant Chimham. Let him come. Let him stay with you. Okay? And so David says, your wish is my command. You know, you've been so faithful and true to me. I want to do for you whatever I can. So Chimham will come and he will stay with me. So you have these. And then the final group that comes, though, is the men of Israel and Judah. And there's not a whole lot stated here other than that the men of Israel come, and they come how? Angry, aggravated, irritated, okay? Because there's this big deal, you know, with the men of Judah, the elders of Judah, bringing David back. And it appears that in all this celebration, that they failed to do what? Include Israel. Now, what's interesting here, okay, is I believe that these accounts were written after they happened, okay? What you see here is the indication of the split that was going to happen in just a few years later, okay, 40 to 60 years later, okay? That when, after Solomon's reign and Rehoboam becomes the king, then Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, becomes the king of Israel, the 10 tribes of Israel, and Rehoboam still retains two. And so this is written after the fact, but you can see the seeds of the split already starting to occur, okay? That the men of Judah did not invite the men of Israel to come as a part of the celebration. The men of Judah, or the men of Israel, come, and they're irritated because, go all the way back to the beginning of the message, where did the seeds of David's return start? With the men of Israel. Not the elders of Judah. David sent to the elders of Judah and said, why are the men of Israel and the people of Israel talking about this? And you are my own flesh and bones, and you're not having me come back. So the movement to bring David back actually started with the tribes of Israel. Isn't that interesting? Not the tribe of Judah. And so the tribe of Judah just grabs a hold of it, and they're going to have this big celebration to bring David back. And they fail to invite all the men of Israel. Isn't that interesting? And so you have the seeds here, and that's really all we're going to talk about here. You have the seeds of what we're going to see in the days ahead. So just kind of remember that. But even in a celebration, even when everything's supposed to be good, we have a tendency to allow our what? Our flesh, our sin, to get involved. It's a remembrance for us as a body of believers. Even in the good times, we've got to be careful. Because why? Seeds of rebellion are always going to be within us. Okay? And you may not think it's you right now, but it could be you. Does that make sense? You think about what Paul told the elders of Ephesus when they met him in Miletus. He says, after I depart, there are going to be wolves that come from inside and outside. Okay? And so division usually doesn't come from the outside. Division usually comes from the inside. And so we've got to remember that God's got a purpose and God's got a plan. But as God has the purpose and God has a plan, that Satan is going to want to what? Destroy it. It could be me as a leader giving provocation to some because I disrespect you in some manner. Does that make sense? What should you do if you feel disrespected or left out by me or Steve or Brian or Mark or whatever? You should come talk to me, not everybody else, okay? I mean, I've told you, I'm a sinner just like you are, and I'm going to what? Sin. Why do people sin? Because they're sinners. So I'm confessing to you, I'm a sinner, okay? So I know in that there are going to be times when I'm going to sin, okay? I've had people, and some of you know, they've been there, that people have accused me of being prideful. And I said, you're right. You're right. I'm not proud of my pride, okay? But I recognize that I can struggle with that. And I appreciate it when the person told me that. Because then I could what? Apologize. Does that make sense? The same thing holds true. I believe that every one of you, this sounds awful, you have the potential to be what? A sin. Yeah, because you're all sinners. And so we have to hold one another accountable. So as we conclude here, though, the questions we have is, how easy is it for you to take charge of the situation and forget to allow God to lead, like David did? David wanted to take the bulls by the horn. Okay? He said, I see God's at the move, so I'm going to what? I'm going to help God out. But I think, again, in helping God out, he also sowed some more seeds for later rebellion. Okay? Are you in the midst of a situation in which you need to ask God's forgiveness and to step aside then? If so, will you talk to God now about it? It's always easy to say, oh, yeah, I can think of one right now, and then we just let it go. Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own self. For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer of the word, he's like a man who beholds himself in the glass or the mirror. He beholds himself and goes his way, and straightway he forgets what manner of man he was. But whoso looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues therein, being not a forgetful hearer but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. If God uses his word to reveal dross, don't say, I'll take care of that later. Take care of it now. How have you been treating those who have been loyal to you? Okay? I've been really seeking God on this and just really trying to because this again, I'm not preaching at you. You just get some of the residuals of what God's working through me, okay? And so you have to ask those questions. Have you been taking their loyalty for granted? Have you disrespected them? Is your sense of justice influenced by the goals that you are seeking to accomplish? And so you come through, and all these ones who were coming to him, everybody was looking for what? Justice from the king. But they all wanted justice from their own perspective. Do we really want justice from the perspective of God? If we had justice from the perspective of God, guess what? We'd all be condemned. That's exactly right, okay? And so finally, is there a need then to change the way you think and therefore change the way you act? Let's pray. Father, thank you for your love. Thank you again for your word. It's quick, it's powerful, and it's sharper than a two-edged sword. I thank you for the example of David and the life, Lord, that you've hidden nothing from us. You've said that this is a man after your own heart. And yet we see the struggles that he had as a man. But we see ourselves so much in David. And yet you've declared that he was a man of your own heart. I thank you for that, Lord. That we can still realize that you see our heart for you, our desire for you, even within the struggles that we have in our flesh. Lord, help us to forget the things which are behind and reach forward to the things which are before. Help us to press toward the mark for the prize, a high call of God in Christ Jesus, that we may know you in the power of your resurrection and the fellowship of your sufferings. That we may be like those cities that are set upon a hill whose light cannot be hid, that you would receive the glory. In Christ's name, amen.